our panel today, our session, is Influences in Your DNA. Hashtag is DNA, SXSW. So feel free to comment, give us feedback, mention it to your friends. We love to hear what you guys think. So want to introduce myself. I'm Paul Sarnan. I'm Director of Digital Strategy at Yamamoto, an agency in Minneapolis. Also a partner in Zingstring.
I'm Scott Farnkrug. I'm a professor of genetics at the University of Minnesota and a CEO of a company called Recombinetics that's accelerating genetics in livestock. This topic is not connected to that. Moo.
You guys hear me okay? I'm good? Okay. So let's get started. I want to level set really why we're here and what's happening in the industry. As a marketer, we are leveraging lots and lots of data coming from lots of sources. Here are just a few examples that you'll see. Experian and Equifax, companies like that, and Axiom are gathering demographic data about you. There's lots of data points, psychographic, demographic. We have the Facebooks and the Googles gathering lots of information about you. And the question is, from an ownership standpoint, whose data is it? Is it theirs? Is it ours? Right? So we started pondering this question when we were putting this presentation together in a larger construct. What are they trying to do with this data? And how is it relevant? So you may have read recently a front page story in the New York Times about a company that's based out of Minneapolis called Target. So the story, if you haven't read the story, we'll summarize it. Essentially, a father showed up at a store, was very angry because his teenage daughter was getting coupons for pregnancy products, for baby items. And he wanted to understand, why were they sending my teenage daughter these coupons? Are they trying to convince her to get pregnant? The store manager apologized profusely, said they'd check in on it. They had no clue what's going on. A week later, they checked in on him and said, and asked him, we apologize for this. We wanted to check in and see how things are going. And he said something that shocked the store manager. He said, I sat down and talked to my teenage daughter, and in fact, she is pregnant. So with purchase data alone, they've been able to summarize within a category of products a high likelihood of pregnancy, and when that person will be delivering based upon a product mix. So those are the situations we're dealing with today, and it's going to get more and more invasive. And to illustrate that, I don't know if this is a very common knowledge, a piece of information. Relationship data, if you guys have said it in Facebook, they did start doing some correlation studies. The accuracy isn't extremely high yet, but they're attempting to understand when your relationship status changes and when it will potentially... And who is going to be with. So they are working on this, and they're getting better and better accuracy with this. Back to the credit card companies and the credit databases, there's over 600 points of information that they can use. They can predict up to 2 years ahead of time whether you're going to get a divorce, and they're not obligated to tell you this information. And who here has never heard of Foursquare? Don't raise your hand. I don't want to embarrass you. Right. So an interesting thing happened last year when I was down here listening to Dennis Crowley speak about really where their next steps were going. And he said something that was pretty profound. He said, it's not about points on maps, but rather paths and trajectories. Ultimately, they're building a data marketplace around venue IDs, but they want to predict, based upon your friends, where they are, your patterns, where you're going to go next. And that's pretty awesome and also pretty scary. So when we talk about the convergence of this data, Clout's an excellent example of this. Here's is actually my Clout profile. I'm not very popular, guys, sorry. I doubt this is going to help. So Clout allows me to put my data sets together. I have a couple here. And it measures my reach. You know, how many people do I affect? What's the influence of my network, and what types of topics I'm influential about. And you're seeing that maybe not necessarily one of these data sets by themselves is important, but you're starting to see the conglomeration of this data and the layers of it being more and more important. And I think there's arguments of whether this is accurate or not, but the fact that they're pulling these data sets together to try to predict how influential you are online and how much value you have in your community is really interesting. And I think what we want to talk about as we go forward are what other data sets are available and how accurate will that be.
Well, so the concept for this presentation comes out of Paul and I having a conversation over a beer and him asking me the question, is my Clout score genetic? And the answer, of course, is, well, you are your DNA, the instructions in your genome, about 6 billion data points, the instructions on how to build the parts and how to assemble them. Yes, I need to be. You can advance it. And frankly, even your behavior is genetic. So it's actually the Behavioral Genetics Association. They have their annual meeting where thousands of geneticists get together and we talk about the fact that the way we act is encoded in our genome. They've got their own journal, and I'm just pointing to one of the journals. There's several of them. And some of the studies were, I guess, more famous studies are ones in which researchers at the University of Minnesota have looked at how similar monozygotic twins are. So monozygotic twins are actually identical. They're clones. Don't be afraid. Okay. But because of various events in life, these twins end up getting separated and raised under different environments. So quite different environments in some cases. And as it turns out, I mean, it's really pretty freaky. Their behaviors, their choices in careers, many of their psychological characteristics turn out to be conserved. That's personality, temperament, IQ, things along those lines. So is it possible? Yes, in fact, it's likely that participation in social media, responsiveness to messaging, whether someone's an early adopter or not, what sort of brand loyalty they show, those are all likely to be predictable with a large enough data set, and in fact is likely to be a target for increasing the precision with which we're all marketed to. So when I talk about genomes and I talk about 6 billion data points, it seems kind of crazy and out there in science fiction, and you're all probably feeling a little creepy about now. But there are actually companies on the market that are delivering value and products to their customers in an opt-in scenario. A few examples are given here, and folks are using this for different reasons. people who are interested in their family genealogy, of course, can use this data to trace their origin, their history, their families are all connected through their genetics. And several of these companies are also providing data about their predisposition or their propensity for various conditions, as well as their preferences. I'll just say that the platform, the technology platform that's being used for these right now is are these little chips that give these researchers about 1 million data points. One of the probably better known of these companies is called 23andMe. This was started in 2005 by Ann Wojcicki and Linda Avery. They've got some rather large investments from venture capital firm New Enterprise Associates. Genentech might be a familiar name to you. Perhaps the most striking investor was an early angel, Google. I find it rather interesting that Anne is married to Sergey Brin, who started Google, so I'm not going to try to imply anything other than rest assured everything we're going to talk about today has been discussed around the dinner table.
Here's an example of some data that 23andMe will give you. This is actually, my wife gave me permission to use this information, so I'm not going to get in trouble later on this week when I come home. So from a disease risk standpoint, after my wife submitted her DNA to 23andMe to get genotyped, you'll see a level of confidence around disease risk. So for example, the top one, and I'm not a medical professional, but she has a 3.44 time greater increase risk of getting this disease with, in fact, if you look at something further down the chart, like lung cancer, it's only 1.3 times. So there's a level of confidence and risk, and you can see how potentially that would be beneficial not only for you as a consumer, but what potentially might be used in the future. 23andMe also gives you some ancestry information. My wife is extremely Scandinavian, and it definitely shows through here, but there were definitely interesting information that was gathered and given to her with you know, her genes having some Asian in it as well. So some pretty interesting stuff.
Well, so we've told you that that data is already being collected on your behavior, your presence on the internet, your purchasing behavior, and we just told you there's a possibility to collect your genetic data and to make conclusions about your predispositions. And so one of the more exciting thoughts about this is that actually each of us represents a walking clinical trial. If you're willing to share all that data, then this provides a leverage for the healthcare industry to get more data points, more information, make more associations and more conclusions to help increase the health and well-being of our citizens. You know, you connect that to things like telemetry, where you're constantly monitoring your blood pressure or monitoring your blood sugar, and then it starts to become clear that really all of this data, when brought together, can contribute to the development of therapeutics and therapies to increase our health. Well, so this is actually my data, and I have to say, I was an early adopter. Being a geneticist, I wanted to see what these companies were going to be delivering to their customers, what kind of results and data they're going to give back, and I was pretty shocked about some of the traits that they're looking at. Now, mind you, they're looking both at my genetics, and I'm filling out surveys to try to increase the value of the data, and it's really pretty striking to me that a lot of these traits actually represent real marketing opportunities. Well, I've got a high propensity to hair curl, which I already knew that, so I keep my hair cut short, but you can imagine that that represents a marketing opportunity for Clairol, or if I, you know, wanted to keep my hair long and not curly, well, maybe Relaxer or something along those lines. You'll notice one of the traits is lactose intolerance. So I'm not lactose intolerant, which means I can eat lots of ice cream, which is evident in my physique. Okay. So imagine that Ben and Jerry's doesn't want to market their ice cream to someone who's lactose intolerant, or if there's a special ice cream product that's low in lactose, that they might want to send a Groupon to that person to try that product instead. Another one of these traits is bitter taste perception. Okay, some people are more or less sensitive to bitter tastes. I think one of the traits not on here was, can you detect a strange odor when you eat asparagus? Well, yeah, don't send me a coupon for asparagus. Well, so those companies are using that old platform. It's about 1 million data points, and they're coming up with very interesting, potentially marketable data. But everything's changed now. When I started in science, sequencing DNA was very difficult, laborious process. It was very slow, and it was very expensive. And we predicted sometime in the future DNA sequencing would start to follow Moore's Law. It would get cheaper and faster, and actually it crushed Moore's Law. All right. The technology now allows us to sequence your genome to about a 10x redundancy, so that gets rid of the errors, for about $1,000 now. And within a few years, it'll cost about $10 to sequence a genome, and you may as well just consider it free at some point. It'll be be a tricorder. He's got funny DNA, sir. Well, it opens up all kinds of other things as well. So, you know, it cost us about $2 billion to sequence the human genome the first time through. And one of the winners in the race to sequence the human genome was Craig Venter. He started a company called Celera. And in competition with all the public efforts, he won the race. And it was a very contentious time. I remember President Clinton, you know, making everybody shake hands, and yay, we did it. And Craig Venter took his money and bought a nice sailboat and put a bunch of DNA sequencers on it and started sailing around the world. And he did something no one had ever thought of before, which is environmental DNA sequencing. So in this case, we're not sequencing individuals, we're sequencing populations. So taking a soup of microorganisms out of the Sargasso Sea, sequencing the genome, and then distinguishing individuals post facto. So segregating the data, identifying the species, and of course his objective was to identify valuable genes. His purpose, to find those genes that are important for converting sunlight and sugar into fuel. And he now has a company that's focused on just that. He's developing artificial life, so to speak. Synthetic biology is a whole new field that emerges from this. But this is an opportunity then from sequencing from complex DNA mixes. You can identify individuals and you can make conclusions about that genetic content. Add to that, there's another example over to the right there. These are just interesting graphical ways of looking at data about a pandemic. So taking environmental samples from pathogens around the world, one can follow the progression of viral infection and how quickly the virus is evolving and responding, and one can monitor its pathogenicity, its virulence. Really powerful stuff. But what it suggests is that given that we can sequence for cheaper and we need less DNA and less differentiation before you start the process, it supports the idea that actually we're going to be able to sequence human genomes from environmental samples. Well, so I just want to take a little aside here and give you an example where that clearly demonstrates you actually don't own your DNA. You think you do. You don't own your cells. This is a woman, Henrietta Lacks. She died of cervical cancer in 1951. One of her doctors took some tissue samples and did something that changed the face of biology. For the very first time, he was able to get a human cells to grow in a petri dish, in culture, replicate in large numbers, which provides a venue for studying genes, studying biology, studying compounds, drug development. In fact, I think as of 2009, over 60,000 research publications had been published on the basis of these cells, and it was increasing at the rate of about 300 a month. These cells are a critical component to the pharmaceutical industry. Her family got nothing out of that deal. This case was brought up actually in a Supreme Court case in California that was similar. There was an individual whose tissue was taken and was being used by the drug companies to develop pharmaceuticals. And it was concluded that actually once those cells were disposed of or taken by the healthcare system, that you nor your family is entitled to any of the value that emerges from that. I don't know if there's been any other rulings since that case, but we weren't able to find any. That leaves it hanging out there that you don't actually own your cells. Next one.
So we've established, again, all these different data layers that are being mined, okay? And what we're seeing is this data starting to come together. These data sets by themselves are valuable, but them coming together is even more valuable. So as a marketer, my job is to look at you as an individual and better understand you. And the convergence of this data is allowing me to do that through, you know, I can probably determine your physique through if you were a member of Jenny Craig, providing data of what you ate, potentially with Nike Plus, how much do you exercise? Nintendo is doing it with the Wii. Relationships like Facebook or online dating sites. Your consumption habits through Experian, Equifax, and understanding what kind of lifestyle you live through that information. And location services, which are expanding every single day. We're seeing new ones come out every day. And they're actually... what I found interesting is connecting your Amex card to a Foursquare account. So now I've got purchase data and location all harmonized in one place. And now we add on genetics and your genetic sequence. So what does that mean? Well, that means that we're getting a clearer picture of who you are, what you're going to do, and build better and better models to know what you're going to do next. So that leads us to the real question why we're here in Austin, right? Is beer an acquired taste, or is it genetically predisposed, right? I always wanted to know this because I don't like stouts. So Scott talked earlier about his profile and the bitterness predisposition, right? So, for example, I'm Anheuser-Busch. I have a large portfolio of beer types, right? Why would I spend money on marketing to somebody who doesn't like the bitter taste and probably doesn't like an IPA? I can use this information, just this one singular piece of information, to better target my beer selection. So that would be one example. I prefer Lone Star, by the way. Yeah, I don't get any money from that.
Well, and I like burgers. I like ice cream. I like burgers. Okay, wait a minute. So what happens if McDonald's actually has access to not only all of my purchasing behaviors previously, but also my genetics? You know, what's the margin on a burger versus the margin on a salad? And what's the lifetime of your customer if you're feeding them burgers versus a salad? So these are sort of cost analysis that you can imagine going on behind closed doors. And does McDonald's have a moral obligation to look out for your well-being? Or are they just going to look at the economics? Now, I might want to get a coupon for Big Macs. My wife might want me to get a coupon for salads. So who should decide?
So what we found, the marketplace, I think what we're saying here is the marketplace is getting pretty darn close for this to become a reality, and it's already really starting to happen right now. As Scott had mentioned, you know, we're dealing with 6 billion base pairs. From a data perspective, that equals about 6 gigabytes of data per DNA sequence. So each one of you, your DNA sequence is about 6 gigabytes. To put that in perspective, if I took the population of the United States as of yesterday, sorry, I didn't include today, so data's old, that represents about 1,800 petabytes or roughly 2 exabytes. And nobody's really measuring data beyond petabytes at this point. But because of this vast amount of data, we require technology to look through it, to store it, to process it. And lucky for us, there are actually technologies that have been adapted to, being used for many different things. As you see, the cost per megabyte in the DNA sequence is also blown Moore's Law apart. And no thanks to, you know, Amazon Web Services spooling up a multitude of servers in order to answer questions, Hadoop, Cloudera, you know, and even potentially, you know, distributed computing like SETI, who've been doing this for years, processing data across multiple persons' desktops. So we have the technology to process this data, store it, look for correlations, and as a marketing professional, you know, this, I would love to do nothing less than do that. So that leads us into the question of, again, why we're here. Privacy. So I don't know if you guys attended the Google Plus session yesterday. I know. I think it's interesting to see where we're going in terms of data and visibility and privacy. Google Plus, as you know, introduced Google Circles, which allows you to segment your friends and individuals you have contact with and the type of information that they can see. You could also extract your information out of Google Plus. Facebook as well has, you know, adapted privacy, you know, filters. As a marketer, I can't see everybody's Facebook profile. And so that makes things a little bit more difficult when I'm mining profiles for data, interest, things like that. In the healthcare industry, it's interesting. In if you have, when you were born, had a blood spot taken, you have the ability to request the blood spot be returned to you or destroyed. That genetic information, that genetic material is usually on file and is something that you can request from your place of birth. Even to electronic medical records. Now, it's questionable whether or not the notes the doctor has put into your medical record, is it yours? Have you purchased it? Is it their analysis, something that you own? Because a lot of times hospitals will remove notes that they've interpreted based upon the doctor's diagnosis, and they will sanitize your medical record before they give it back to you. This is something that's happening today.
Well, so I mentioned the environmental DNA sampling and sequencing, and I would just point out to you that you're leaving DNA everywhere as you walk around. I told you, you're shedding about 1 million skin cells a day. You can get DNA out of hair follicles, out of your chewing gum, off of your glass at the restaurant, and off the grocery store shelves. What kind of person is touching my product? All right? Scary, right? But realistically possible, and understand that there's an opportunity to also connect who's touching my product to purchasing behavior. So you put all that data together, and your genetic anonymity truly is at risk. All your data are belong to us. And so what are the solutions? You know, I think we can all put our heads in the sand and say, oh, this is science fiction, this is ridiculous, it's not going to happen, and, well, okay. You can divorce yourself from technology, and actually, frankly, some of the things that have been happening recently have caused some of my friends to change their behavior. My Twitter account is now private, okay? I've deleted my cloud account. I've got a friend who's signing off of Facebook. He said, that's it. I'm not doing this anymore. That's a solution. One potential solution is let's get active. Let's get political. All right, let's pass some laws. I would just suggest that thus far, our ability to protect privacy using legislative means has not been very successful. Another alternative, though, is really let's just lock it down. Let's put it in a bank. Let's protect the genetic equity that's in you. And go ahead to the next slide then. So is there a way to protect it, the privacy of the data? If I sequence your genome, is there a potential for us to patent or copyright it so that we have some control? I think so. We're exploring this with lawyers right now. We want to ensure that the genetic value that's contained in your genome gets returns to you, instead of just to the marketers that are taking the data without permission. Is there an opportunity for you to have some control over how that data is interpreted and return the value to you? Can you get some dividends when someone's actually creating value by analyzing your data? And none of us wants Gattaca, right? If you haven't seen it, watch it. So our proposition here is that your genome and your phenome, that, by the way, is all your activities, all your outward appearance, belongs to you, okay? And we predict that there will be personal genetics used as a marketing tool. Somebody's going to get paid. We propose that a genetic equity trust can enforce your ownership and provides an opportunity for an opt-in. Now, that opt-in can be nothing more than locking it down. It says, that's my copyrighted genome. You don't have a right to use the data. That's it. I'm done. Okay, you paid to have your genome sequenced. You spent the $10, and now it's locked down, and if anyone violates the use of that data, then there's an opportunity, there's a structure to enforce that. However, there's also opportunities for other opt-in kinds of activity. You might want to, say, share your data with a philanthropic organization, say Michael J. Fox Foundation, right? Or some other disease-specialized foundation. They can make use of your data. They can learn from it, and you're contributing to the public good. You're helping increase the health and well-being of sick people. Or maybe you want to get paid. Maybe you want us to market your data to pharmaceutical companies. And when they develop that blockbuster drug and your data was part of their analysis that led to that blockbuster drug, you get paid. Or maybe you're open to the idea of, you know what, I'm sick of getting these random ads. I want a targeted Groupon that recognizes my behavior and my genetics. And so we see some marketing opportunities that can return dividends to the holders of their genetic equity. We lost a picture.
Yeah. Somehow.
Just hit forward once. Okay. There it is. So we've been exploring this idea, and we've now started a little startup called Meanome, and there's been little DNA test kits kind of going through the audience. This is conceptual. If you haven't seen them, just keep them circulating. The idea here is that this is an opt-in only participation, that you have the opportunity to control your own destiny, to invest in yourself, and hopefully get paid. And we don't know what the structure of this company is going to be yet. We think this should probably be like a co-op or something, right? Because we don't want to swap one evil business segment for another evil business segment. We want opt-in only. We want people to have the right to control their data. And it seems to me like a co-op is the right kind of model.
So I guess this is illustrating a picture of what this may look like when your genetic data becomes affordable to sequence here in the near future, and it being used as a data layer to understand a little bit more about you, maybe a lot more about you. So imagine today, you know, through genotyping, they're using about 1 million data points to understand the things that we illustrated. It's just a small sample. You know, at 6 billion data points, we haven't even scratched the surface of what is available to us and what will be understood in the future. So we see a wide array of opportunities, but we do definitely believe this. We wanted to get ahead of this topic because the marketplace is starting to converge in this area, and a lot of people are not talking about it. Scott, on the science end of things, the scientists aren't looking at it from a marketing perspective. Marketing people like myself weren't even aware that this technology was this close and this affordable to being mainstream. So I can imagine a day in the near future where you can walk into your local Walgreens or CVS and for a $10 bill get your information gathered. We think we want to get ahead of this. We definitely want to get ahead of this topic. And we really would love your input on this concept. So if you guys have any questions, they've put a mic here. I would also like to mention we will be in the near future putting a Kickstarter campaign together, so keep an eye out for it.
Really, is this on? Yeah? Okay. Really appreciate the conversation, the very thought-provoking. Have a number of different directions to go in questions. I'm involved with a startup called AgeMarker.com that's looking at the other side of, and 23andMe is the main way that's out there that people are using genetic information. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on with biomarkers for aging in the near future, telomere biology, and those tests are going to come down to $200. And when it came out in England, everyone was like, oh, this is the death test. This is going to tell me when I'm going to die. I mean, very sensational and problematic, but also extraordinary as a feedback loop on health practices and things. So all of this stuff, it seems like it has, if it's targeted right or with the right opt-in, can be really, really beneficial. So I'd love your general comments on that part of the space. And beyond that, is there a danger by sounding the alarms too much in the sense of, we have to be careful it doesn't get overshadowed. The positive benefits of all this information don't get overshadowed by people's knee-jerk reaction of, oh, here's something that can help my health. They think it's a death test. People think, oh, my God, shut everything down. Mm-hmm. People should get to make their choices, but not from an air of hysteria.
Right. Yeah, I think the real point here is that the technology is here now. It's only going to get better. Our predictability is only going to get better. The information is going to be available, and someone will use it. And so I like the idea of, by the way, if you're going to analyze my genome and combine it with all my other data, that I get to control what the interpretations are too. No, you're not allowed to send me a coupon for colostomy bags because I have high propensity to Crohn's disease, okay? That's just off limits. And the data is going to be there, it's going to be used, and we're going to have to start having this conversation about how to protect the integrity and privacy of people and give them the opportunity to experience the benefits that are going to come out of it.
I guess on the subject of just you know, how are people reacting to this stuff? Well, this is a little ahead of the curve, I think, in terms of the conversation where it is today. I was absolutely astounded how many people didn't realize, based upon that New York Times article on Target, that they were using purchase data to predict things. They did not know. So I think getting the conversation out there early is better. I think the examples that I presented, most people hadn't seen, you know, what Facebook could potentially do with your data and what they could predict, or they don't know that credit card companies can predict divorce. It's kind of scary, but if you have at least some ownership over your own data, and I think personally, it's probably one of the most private pieces of data, other than your thoughts, that you own. You should have ownership of it. And I think the conversation, and we've had a lot of legal advice around this as well, has to be, you know, seen through to protect people, or give the people have the option to be protected. So.
You touched on the potential medical benefit, being able to see your genetic information in terms of seeing your risk factors for whatever, thromboembolism or, whatever, a whole series of things. I think the flip side to that benefit and sort of the elephant in the room is what happens when people like insurance companies have access to that same data and choose to not cover you for certain things, or choose at what point to stop covering you because there's a pretty strong likelihood that A, B, or C is going to happen, and we don't want to have to incur the financial risk of covering you.
Yeah. Well, so I'll tell you what, the scientists have really gotten out ahead of this. There's been legislation passed that makes it illegal for insurance companies to discriminate against you. However, it's perfectly legal for them to incentivize you. As you know, that's become now the current practice to try to get our citizens and our insured parties in better shape. We incentivize behavior. So we have tried to protect against discrimination, but it's entirely likely that the genome of every individual will be sequenced when they're born. And that'll be used by the health industry. And I'll just say that in that context, there really are regulations in healthcare for how and what you do with the data, because it impacts on your physical well-being. There's no rules yet about marketing, okay? So it may turn out you have a propensity to disease, and not only it's private in the context of insurance and things in that arena, but you may start getting coupons for your propensity.
I think that's a really good question. I think we anticipate that question a lot. I think it's on the top of people's minds. As Scott mentioned a bit, you know, we've had some experiences with wellness organizations. So the large corporations are now leveraging large data sets and even visits to your doctor to see, you know, how much you're costing the organization on your insurance premiums. So they start with the carrot: we'll pay for a trainer because you're a little overweight, Paul, and you're a little bit lazy. So we need to, you know, whip you back in shape.
He said Paul, but we all know what he means.
I wasn't even looking. So I think the other flip side of it, and you've seen this, is, okay, if this incentivized program doesn't work, you're going to pay higher premium, and you're starting to see that. And that's not even with genetic information. They're doing that with other behavioral data as well. So, well, I think in terms of...
I think that's a really good point. Yeah. So we just said that you are your DNA, right? Your behavior is a manifestation of your DNA, and now that it's against the law to discriminate based on your DNA sequence, isn't it against the law to discriminate insurance-wise against your behavior? And I think there's a strong legal case for that. We can expect to see that discussion.
Hi. A large part of the conversation has been around privacy, around protection, and we're talking about solutions in terms of kind of containing and maintaining that. And I can't stop but feel that it's coming from people who have a few or more gray hairs, and that to what degree do you feel that this is because that when we were young, this wasn't around, so we're trying to kind of You know, most of us with gray hairs have less friends than people who don't have gray hairs. And people in their 20s on their Facebook accounts have thousands of friends and they share everything. And do you think that someone in their early 20s really cares about this stuff to the point that we do? And do they not just see it as a solution for better services? And it's a problem that because we're old, we're kind of saying, hey, stop this. This shouldn't happen.
Yeah. And you're hitting the nail on the head. And some people are more or less willing to share all their personal details on the internet, for example. And I think, you know, the answer is, it's fine as long as it's opt-in. Okay? Don't trick me. Don't give me 20 pages of... a contract that in which the result is I'm giving away my entire life so I can have that app on my phone. Okay, and by the way, that's been in the press too. Those long agreements that you sign off on are probably not constitutional because people don't actually know what they mean. All right, so let's get rid of this opt-out stuff and make everything opt-in, and then fine, those kids will just opt in for all this stuff, and there's a huge amount of value we can extract.
I think you definitely have a point, and I mean, I'm not in my 20s anymore, thank goodness. if I look at my, you know, I have a teenager, and thinking about, does he care about this kind of stuff? Absolutely not. I do think it's important for us to pass down some systems that allow us to have a little bit more control over. How we're marketed to, how we're sold to, and put those, I guess, systems in place to give them a chance to make those decisions on their own, how they want to be perceived. We haven't even scratched the surface of what was possible yet. And you know, I do this for a living, and I'm amazed every day about what's happening. So we don't necessarily know what the future holds for this, but I think we have a perspective. So, thank you.
First off, this was my number one choice for a session, and you more than exceeded my expectations. So, thank you for that. I love the innovativeness of the opt-in model for your equity system, but I'm wondering how can you protect the data even with this opt-in system against law enforcement? If we're talking about predictive behaviors, and I can imagine where that goes, right? Mm-hmm. You do X, Y, and Z. You went to a gambling site. You drink Miller beer. You whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You better start watching Joe. Mm-hmm. And can they extract it, or have you been thinking along those lines?
Yeah. No, we actually haven't had that discussion about law enforcement, but I'm afraid of the jackbooted thugs too, and I would encourage all of you to have a discussion with your elected representatives to get rid of this Patriot Act, because it takes away so many of the liberties that this country was really founded on. And in answer to your question, yeah, I want a big firewall between us and anyone our customers doesn't want to see their data, and if that means it has to be put in a Swiss bank account, fine. Okay. In the end, you know, when they come with their tanks and their guns, we're going to have to turn over the data. We can only do so much.
I don't know if I can respond past that. That's, I think you covered it.
There's a lot of futurists out there that have dealt with the subject of pre-crime, right? I mean, you know, Minority Report. I mean, this is kind of what you're getting to. It's like, can you predict crime? Can you predict outcomes based upon behaviors in the future? And that seems very obviously science fiction-y right now. But there might be behavioral traits that, you know, your chances of doing a violent crime in your future based upon behaviors is genetically encoded. But that doesn't necessarily 100% dictate that you're going to do a violent crime, right? So this is not manifest destiny. This isn't something that you are going to do 100% chance of. I don't know. I mean, I can't see that far out, but, you know, it's definitely an interesting topic.
I think, you know, it gets to the point that all of this data, any one data type, any one data point has a certain predictability value to it. It's not conclusive. And You get more predictability when you pull all the data types together. Okay, but again, it's just predictability. And I don't know, I've been raised to believe that thought isn't a crime, and that law enforcement's got no business looking for the potential for committing crime. And that's just a bigger issue. This is just another kind of data, and we've got to tackle that bigger issue, I think, at its root.
If you think about the regulation of the genetic testing, I think there's an international aspect to it as well. So, for example, testing for sports abilities is illegal in this country. So you cannot, if there's a sports club for teenagers that somebody's investing money into and would like to get the best return on their money, they cannot test whether, this kid is going to be next Michael Jordan and that one isn't. While it's perfectly legal to do in Russia or China. Mm-hmm. And these governments actually are pumping the money into the, and try to get the best return on their money by doing just that.
Yeah.
In 20 years, I'm pretty sure that is going to result in a different weight of the gold medals in the Olympics between the countries.
Well, and I'll tell you, this gets to the who's doing it, who's requesting the data. One of the traits in the 23andMe panel has to do with my fast twitch muscle fiber type.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm a long distance runner. I know. Can you tell? But seriously, you can tell something about someone's physique from their genetics. You tell something about their athletic potential from their genetics. And the question is, who is querying that? Who gets to decide what happens with that data? If, in fact, it's the individual that says, no, I have this really good genotype, shouldn't they have the right to submit that as a piece of data, a piece of information about them? Oh, and by the way, I run 20 miles a day. Okay, whatever that is. And it's completely different from the perspective of there's some, amorphous, smoke-filled room with people that are looking at other people's genetic data without their permission and making decisions as to what is available to them or not. I think we'd all be afraid of the latter case and not so worried about the former case.
So I think all I'm saying is that there needs to,
harmonization.
Is harmonization and finding some balance between the different countries.
I agree. Good point.
Yeah.
Thank you guys very much for your time.
Cheers.